Well, we started this series last week called Open Invitation, and it's really all about this idea. If you missed last week, I'm going to try to catch up a little bit, but just the fact that an invitation can be a powerful thing. Now, not every invitation is a powerful thing. Some invitations are just kind of no big deal, but an invitation can be a very powerful thing. And I want you to think back to some of the recent invitations that you have received in your life. Again, could have just been to kind of just a normal event, run of the mill. Like maybe you got invited to a wedding and it was just another wedding or graduation or retirement party. But maybe some of you got invited to jury duty. Anybody have that recently? Yeah. They call it a summons. It's not even really an invitation. It's a summons, which makes it sound more important, you know, I guess. But I recently got invited to jury duty. Earlier this year, got the note in the mail, and then right before I was supposed to show up the next morning, I got uninvited to jury duty. So that kind of worked out nice for me. Yeah, that's applause worthy. Actually, though, I was kind of skeptical of like, hey, did someone hack my email and send me this email saying I don't need to be there? Like, am I going to not show up tomorrow, and then there's going to be a warrant out for my arrest? Thankfully, I think it really was the real deal. But yeah, some invitations are bigger than others. Maybe the IRS invited you to pay more in taxes, you know, because they audited you and there was some question marks that they had. So yeah, invitations, they can be good, they can be bad, they can be small, they can be big. But here's the thing, it's not until later often that we can tell whether or not an invitation is a good invitation or a bad invitation. If it's a big invitation or a small invitation, the story has to play out a little bit. We have to get down the road a little bit. And sometimes when we get down the road a little bit, we discover, wow, this invitation was a really, really big deal. In fact, sometimes we see that a simple invitation can change a life. A simple invitation, an imperfect invitation, a small invitation, a potentially even an invitation that looks bad on the surface. Because it's often the first domino that starts to fall and leads to so much more in our lives. And then looking back, we see that that invitation was a life-changing thing. We got invited to go study at that university or that college. That acceptance letter was an invitation. And when we accepted that invitation, it changed the direction of our life. Or maybe it was a career thing for us. You know, we got a job offer in a different city. That was an invitation to move and to uproot our life and start over again in another location at a new company. And when we said yes, it was daunting, it was scary, but it ended up changing the course of our lives forever. This happens in friendships and relationships too. We get invited to a meal or to a gathering or maybe just a coffee, and on the surface it looks like no big deal, but then that one coffee turns into multiple coffees and ends up resulting in a lifelong friendship. Or it ends up resulting in a dating relationship that leads to marriage. And now we look back on that one little invitation. That one little invitation changed everything. A simple invitation can change a life. And again, this is true in every area of life, but specifically when it comes to our faith. For followers of Jesus in the room today, our faith really starts with an invitation. If you're not a Christian here today, the center of our faith is not a list of rules. It's not a set of behaviors. It's not even a belief system. You may be surprised to hear that. We actually believe that the center of our faith is a person and a personal invitation. We think that the center of our faith is Jesus of Nazareth, who lived and walked the face of the earth 2,000 years ago, and he constantly extended this invitation right here. Follow me. Follow me. That was the invitation that he gave. And the beautiful thing was, this was an open invitation. It was an invitation that he extended to all, to anyone, to everyone who would take him up on it, which was a really big deal because in the first century, most things were divided by, hey, where you're from and what your background is from and what your family of origin is. But Jesus said, no, I'm creating something. I'm starting something new, and I'm inviting everyone to be a part of it. Follow me. And for many of us in this room, we have taken Jesus up on this invitation. And we've chosen to follow him, and we've chosen to put our faith in him. And at some point after that, when we accept this invitation that Jesus offers to us, we end up taking on a responsibility. Because as we follow him, we get to a point where we realize that the invitation is not just for us. Yes, it's good news for us and we benefit from it. And as we experience that joy and that life and that peace, we begin to realize, wait a second, this would be good news for other people as well. And as we follow Jesus, we realize, oh, we have a responsibility to help others know about this as well, that we don't need to keep it all to ourselves. And often, we are the tool that God uses to bring it to those other people. God uses us to introduce other people in our lives to the good news of Jesus. And if you hear that and that sounds a little bit scary, maybe it's off-putting, maybe it kind of makes your blood pressure go up, that's normal. A lot of folks feel that way when we think about, you know, talking about our faith with other people. But it doesn't have to be scary. It doesn't have to be daunting. In fact, a simple invitation is often all that's required. We don't have to be Bible experts. We don't have to be really far down the line in our faith. We don't have to be someone who's been in church our entire life. We don't have to have a perfect story of our own. A simple invitation is all that is required. No arguing, no convincing, no explaining. We saw this last week in this passage from the New Testament that we looked at, Philip and Nathanael, two followers of Jesus in the first century. And Philip goes to Nathanael. This is before Nathanael had met Jesus. And he tells him all about Jesus. And he tells him where Jesus is from, Nazareth. And Nathanael gets kind of hung up on that. And he's like, Nazareth, really? Could anything good come from there? And Philip responds in such a beautiful way. He just simply says, come and see. Nathanael, just come and see. Just come and see for yourself. And this right here captures the heartbeat of a good invitation. No need to convince, no need to argue, no need to explain. Just simply invite them to come and see. And if you call Brownsbridge home, this is our opportunity right here. You don't have to have all the answers. You don't have to have the perfect button-up story. You can truly help someone's life change simply through this invitation right here. Come and see. Come and see. So I gave you this challenge last week. I started with this challenge right here that everyone invite someone before the end of 2024. Because again, a simple invitation can change someone's life forever. But then I thought about it and I said, you know what? This is an average challenge and I feel like we're above average people. So I upgraded our challenge, okay? I upgraded it to an above average challenge. And the above average challenge is not just to invite, but it's actually to bring everyone, bring someone before the end of 2024. Now, some of you may have gone out last week and you did your homework and you've got someone here today. You're sitting in a seat in here today and you're here for the very first time because someone invited you this past week. And if that's you, I want you to do something for me. First, I just want to say thank you for joining us. We are so grateful you're here. As you heard earlier, we want this place to feel like home and we think it will feel like home eventually. You may wonder, oh gosh, like, does this place have some sort of agenda? And we do. We have an agenda. It's our mission, and we're not ashamed of it. We want to inspire people to follow Jesus because we think that's the best thing for your life. It's the best thing for our community. It's the very best thing for the world. So again, we're grateful you're here. We hope you enjoy yourself. We know your kids are going to love their time in middle school or in elementary school, pre-K, if they're in Wambaland or Upstreet or Transit today, they're going to have a blast. And we hope you come back and see us again. But here's what I want to ask you to do. When you leave here today, or at some point when you say goodbye to the person that invited you, I just want you to pat them on the back and say, good job doing the homework. Okay? Can y'all do that? Because they did. They took me up on the challenge last week and they invited you here. So again, we're grateful that you're here. But everyone here, if you call Brownsbridge home, this is our challenge. Before the end of 2024, which we're now down to about 5 Sundays, that we have the opportunity to bring someone before the end of 2024. Now, if we're gonna do this, this brings up a question for us. If we're gonna bring someone, that means we gotta invite someone, and we don't just have to invite someone in kind of a poor way. We need to invite someone in a really good and effective way. So it begs the question, what makes a good invitation? And said differently, what makes an invitation good? What makes it effective? What makes it not weird? Okay, because none of us wants to be weird in here, okay? What makes it likely to pay off, but also not likely to end a friendship or a relationship if it doesn't pay off? okay? So this is what we're gonna talk about this week and next week is what makes a good invitation. And a good invitation is often preceded by something. Something actually comes first. It's actually some things. There's multiple things that come before a good invitation. We're gonna look at one this week and one next week. As we get started today, I wanna talk about this idea that our invitations, they have competition. Can you think of anything that might compete with an invitation that you make to a coworker or to a neighbor in the neighborhood or someone at the ball field? Yeah, you can think of like 10 things immediately. They can think of 10 things immediately. There's so much going on in our world. Schedules are crazy. People have so much to do. And by the off chance that they don't have something already planned on Sunday, they had planned on doing nothing on Sunday morning. And so there's naturally that competition that we have. But there's actually something bigger and something a little more challenging that we must overcome than just the time commitments that people already have. And it's this word right here. Reputation. Specifically church's reputation, and not specifically our church, but the big church, the big C church, church in general. Every time we invite someone, we're interacting with a person who has a perception of the church. The church has a reputation with each person we invite. And it could be positive, it could be negative, it could be kind of small, like they don't really have many thoughts about it, or they could have a lot of thoughts about it, and it's different from person to person. It's shaped by a number of different things, their family of origin, where they grew up, if they had a church background or not, and maybe it's shaped by a bad church experience. It could be shaped by specific people in their life that claim to be a Christian, but then treated them a different way. It's shaped in a number of different ways, but for each person that we have the opportunity to invite, something comes to mind when we bring up the idea of church. And it doesn't have to be true for it to matter deeply to that person. Perception is reality for them. So we need to be mindful that for every person we invite, the church has a reputation with them. Now, here's the bad news, the tough news, is that for many people in our community, it's not good. What comes to mind when they hear about church or faith or religion, see something on TV or they hear something talking about it, is it's negative. They have a negative view. They're resistant to it. And there's been all sorts of data that's been published on this, different research that's been done around it. But one specific research project Barna did about 2 years ago, it was in December of 2022. We're gonna look at a little bit of this data. It's called Americans Like Jesus and His Message, But Not So Much His Messengers. That's the title of the research project because of what they discovered. They interviewed thousands of people that are in that category of what would be called no faith. Like they don't really believe anything and they're not associated with any specific religion. And they asked them, hey, do you have a positive or a negative view of these various items? And we're just gonna look at a couple of them today. First off, Jesus, he got a pretty good score with them. He ended up getting 40%. So 4 out of 10, they're cool. They're cool with Jesus, right? They don't have faith and all that stuff, but they're like, you know, Jesus, like 4 out of 10 of them are like, yep, thumbs up, we're good. Next on the list though was churches. And the churches were about half of that, 22%. So 1 out of every 5 had a positive view, which means 4 out of every 5 had a negative view. Next category, So I told you last week that, anytime I tell people what I do for a living, it gets awkward. I typically will, you know, if people are having fun, they're having a great time, they find out I'm the pastor and all of a sudden everything changes and they fake that they have a phone call and they start walking in the opposite direction. It gets weird. I think we've discovered why it gets weird, why I kill the party when I show up. Right here, only 18% have a positive view of pastors. So less than 1 out of 5 have a positive view, meaning 4 out of 5, more than 4 out of 5 have a negative view. And then lastly, mega churches. Again, not good for us. We're considered in this category as well, but for mega churches, this was actually the lowest of all the scores, 9%. 9 out of every 100 people that would be in that no faith category would say they have a positive view of megachurches. And this right here, this is what we're up against when we're going to invite someone. This is the competition for our invitations. And it hasn't always been this way. I mean, if you grew up in church and you've been involved in church for a long time, you can probably remember a time where it was different. In fact, I put this together. This is not scientific research at all. This is just kind of my made up thing. But if in 1994, you invited someone to church and they weren't a church person, they were in that no faith category, they might say something or at least feel something like this right here. You know what, church, I'm not good enough to go to church. I mean, I haven't really lived a good life and I'm not on the straight and narrow and I kind of do what I want to do. And so I don't think I'm good enough to go to church. I wouldn't be caught dead in a church. I think lightning would strike if I showed up to a church. But over the last three decades, there's been a flip. There's been a change. If you invite someone in 2024, here is what you're likely to get from people. Again, they may not say it out loud, but they will probably think it to themselves. Church, I don't want to go there because I'm a good person. Again, the dynamic has switched. And this perception right here will keep people away. It will keep people resistant to our invitations. There was a book that came out several years ago called Unchristian that, again, looks into tons of research around what people outside of the faith, what they see the church as, what they see faith as. And they kind of documented and highlighted what the church's reputation is from their vantage point, from all the research they did. And here were the top words that came out of the people that were outside of faith. Judgmental. They see the church as insensitive. They see the church as hypocritical. Church has an us versus them mentality, not to mention a number of other negative perceptions as well. And obviously these are disappointing results. They're disappointing. And the main reason why they're disappointing is because what gives people and what leads people to a perception of the church like that is a departure from what Jesus invited us to do. What people have experienced in their bad church experiences, in their bad Christian experiences, is not people living out their faith in a healthy and committed way. It's actually a departure from what Jesus called us to do, what he invited us to do. In fact, throughout the New Testament, Jesus gave specific instructions opposite of this. Instruction that would prevent any kind of negative reputation. Instruction that would silence the doubters. They may not believe what we believe, but they certainly would respect our way of life. And it's instruction that would pave the way to an easy invitation. Jesus talked about this time and time again, but specifically today, I want to look at one example of this, and it comes from the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 5. Jesus says this as he's talking to his followers there. He says, "You are the light of the world. You are. You are the light of the world. You have something to shine. You have something to show. You have the ability to illuminate other people around you and illuminate life, illuminate the world. You're the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. It cannot help but shine. It cannot help but stand out." What's he talking about here? Well, in Galilee, modern day, you can, as you're walking around the Sea of Galilee, you can look up on the hills and there's actually multiple places where there's ruins from first century towns and villages. These are towns and villages that would have been, they would have been operating in the time of Jesus. So presumably that's what he's talking about in this moment is these. He spent so much time in Galilee. He was talking about these towns and these cities that sit on a hill. Now, why does a town matter? It's because in the first century, if you were outside of a town, if you were solo or if you were with just a small group of people, it really wasn't the safest place to be. You were in danger. And this was especially true at night. And so towns offered refuge. They offered safety to people. And so at nighttime, when you really needed to be in a town and not off on your own, there would be these towns that were lit up and they were shining because of all the light from the city, all the people in the city. And it was kind of this beacon of hope and safety and refuge for people. If they were out on their own or if they were with a small group of people. And Jesus is saying your life should be like this. You're the light of the world. Town on a hill cannot be hidden. Your life should be an obvious source of goodness in the world. Your life should be like that town or that city on a hill. Should be an obvious source of goodness in the world. Jesus continued and he said, neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on a stand and it gives light to everyone in the house. And this kind of makes sense to us today. I mean, we wouldn't turn on the light just to cover it. But in the first century, this was a huge deal. Because of course, there's no electricity. Getting light was a really, really big deal back then. And so you certainly would not go to the trouble of making light just to hide it. No, you would let it illuminate the room. You would let everyone benefit from it. So everyone kind of listening to Jesus in that moment would be like, yeah, this makes sense. Of course, we would never do that. Well, Jesus continues and he says, in the same way that you wouldn't hide that light, in the same way, let your light shine before others. Let it shine before others that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. Jesus is saying, you're the light of the world. You need to let your light shine so that others around you experience that light. And when it comes to our invitations, a good invitation is preceded by something. A good invitation is often preceded by doing good, by following Jesus's direction here. By taking it seriously that he's calling us to let our light shine. If we're no good, then our invitation is no good. If we're not doing any good, then our invitation's not gonna be any good. We cripple our ability to invite when we don't actually follow Jesus with our lives. Our invitations take a hit. And the opposite is also true. They may have a reputation in their mind of the church. They may have a perception of the church. But what's going to impact them way more than that is the way you and I treat them. The way you and I make them feel. The way we live our lives. If we're shining our light, then that reputation they have, that perception they have is going to fade into the distance. That's why Jesus says, let your light shine. That they may see your good deeds and then glorify your Father in heaven. Now, Jesus is kind of condensing this whole thing here. He makes it sound like, oh, as soon as they see your good deeds, they're like, praise the Lord, you know? And it's like, that's not really what's happening, right? There's story here, there's life here that goes on that, gosh, as people see the good deeds in your life, it begins to build trust. It begins to build curiosity. It begins to build a new narrative in their mind of, gosh, I thought Christians were one way, but I'm watching this guy. I'm watching this gal. Maybe there's something more to this whole faith thing. And as that curiosity begins to build, invitations made, that invitation has been preceded by doing good. And so there's some trust built and that invitation's taken up. Someone comes to church, they come to Bible study, they come to your small group, whatever it is you're inviting them to. And eventually, they come to know the good news of Jesus and they glorify your Father in heaven. A good invitation is preceded by something. It's preceded by us letting our light shine and letting our good deeds show. So if that's the case for you and me today, this is the question we should wrestle with. What are you shining? What are you reflecting? What are others seeing? If a third party were to drop down in your life and just kind of follow you through your days the next couple of weeks, what would they conclude? Are you shining the good news of Jesus Is that obvious to the people around you? Are you selfless? Are you kind? Are you forgiving? Are you not holding grudges against one another? These are all the things that Jesus taught over and over and over again. Are you blessing your enemy? Not just not cursing your enemy, but Jesus actually called us, hey, you need to bless your enemies and pray for them. Is that the way you interact with your enemies? Are you serving your neighbors? Are you going out of your way to do something that would benefit them, that would bless them, that would help them? Are you shining? Or are you just kind of focused on your world? And the independent consultant that came in and looked at your life for the next couple of weeks, they'd be like, well, your world's in great shape, but it's not really affecting any other worlds around you. Are you shining? Or are you sharing the gossip that's going around in the workplace or in the neighborhood? Do you just pile on the gossip? When you find out the latest story, it's like you can't wait to share it with someone else. Think about this. Again, this changes everything for us. If you imagine that the person whose house you're going over to share that gossip, if they're thinking to themselves, gosh, I thought he was a Christian. I thought he was a church person. And now he's over here just tearing down this other neighbor. Like, what's he really supposed to be doing? You piling on the gossip? Are you judging others in your heart that everybody who comes along your path, you're putting them in either, you're either good or you're bad. You're making the judgment call. You're sitting in the judgment seat. You have imaginary arguments with people in your head that you win 10 out of 10. You're going to win those. What's your life look like? If we're following Jesus, it should be leading us in a direction that builds trust with the people around us long before we ever invite them. A good invitation is preceded by doing good. So what are you shining? What is your life showing? It's a challenge that all of us need to take personally. All of us need to do, you know, our own examination of our life and wrestle with that question. But I got some good news for you. If you call BBC home, regardless of what your life looks like, regardless of how good you've done at shining that light, or how much you've missed the mark, if you're a part of this place, you're already shining. You're already making good deeds obvious to people. We talk about this often around here, but we have partner organizations throughout our community that we link arms with to make a huge impact in our community. In addition to everything that we do Sundays for adults, for students, and for kids, in addition to everything we do throughout the week for college students and high school students, we have also made it a priority to be in the community. We think the church should operate in such a way that the community knows that we're here and is glad that we're here. We think the church should be an obvious source of good in the community. So what we did is years and years ago, we found great organizations that were doing great things in our community, and we partnered with them. We offered resources and we offered people. And over the years, that has given us a reputation for going out of our way to make a big difference in our community, often where our community needs it the most. Here's just a few things that through our partners we're helping with. Homelessness, you may think of homelessness and be like, I don't know if that's a real big problem around here. I checked this past week and there are actually over 600 students in Forsyth County Schools that meet the federal definition of homelessness. Over 600 students. And so we partner with the homeless liaison for Forsyth County Schools, and we partner with Family Promise, an incredible organization that's helping families that are struggling with homelessness. And they're doing a really incredible job. We partner with organizations that are doing job insecurity, food insecurity, foster care. A couple years ago, I was at a community event and there were some county officials there and some state legislators and different folks from the community. I ran into this one guy. I was introducing myself to different people. I said, my name's Adam. I'm from Brownsbridge. He goes, Brownsbridge. And I wasn't sure what he was going to say next. And he ends up going, you guys do a lot with the fostering initiative in this community, don't you? And I said, yeah, we do. We have a number of families that through the years have fostered or they've been respite families or supportive mentors. And that guy didn't go to our church. He may or may not be a follower of Jesus, but we had a reputation with him. There's a reputation of helping foster kids in our community. Education, we partner with the school system and specific things that they have going on to come alongside them and help them as they pour into our kids and develop our kids. And for many of these organizations, we provide financial assistance to specific projects, specific needs. The Place of Forsyth does a lot with job insecurity and food insecurity. And last year, because of Be Rich, we were able to be a big part of getting them a refrigerator truck so that they could deliver meals to families throughout the week. The food wouldn't spoil as they were delivering these meals. So if you've given to Be Rich in the past, your money this year was working to deliver meals to people all throughout our community who otherwise would not have them. There's countless other organizations, countless other projects. And the interesting thing is, even more than the financial support we give them, our partners love the volunteer hours that so many of you offer them. People just show up to help out with whatever's needed. Just yesterday, we had 30 Brownsbridgers at Baldridge Lodge, which is a home for boys. 30 Brownsbridgers showed up on a Saturday to serve for a couple hours and help the good work that they're doing for kids that are not currently in their home. Since October, since we launched our Be Rich Serve signups, 949 of you have signed up to serve. And I don't know the exact math on that, but that is thousands of hours of service between the middle of October and the end of the year. If that's you, if you offer your time to serve, thank you. If you've given to Be Rich, thank you. If you've given to our church on a regular basis just to support it, that's what enables us to be able to do what we do. Thank you. That's the kind of good that precedes a good invitation. So thank you for helping build that reputation. And if you're sitting in seats right now and you're thinking, uh-oh, that's not me. Adam, I haven't really done any of those things. I've not given, I've not served, and I'm glad to hear that other people have, but you know, I don't really know if that's me. Here's the great news for you, the great news for all of us. You still get to take advantage of the reputation built through the years by those seated around you. You can still take advantage of it. The way has been paved. Our reputation has been built again, year after year after year. And in a lot of ways, the deck has been stacked in our favor because of what we've done collectively. We can be proud of our church. And again, even if people have weird feelings about church, you can just tell them about some of the great things that our church is doing in the community. Again, the way has been paved. Let's not waste that. Let's not let that sit dormant. Let's leverage it. Let's leverage it to bring someone before the end of 2024. Let me pray for us. We'll be dismissed. God, thank you. Thank you for the grace and love that you showed to us through Jesus, how so many of us in here, our lives have been changed because of you, Jesus. Thank you for that. And God, you've invited us not just to follow you, but also to help others follow you. You've invited us to let our light shine in the community so that everyone would see it. They would see our good deeds. God, we're imperfect in that. No one in here has a perfect story, God. So would you just help us to take whatever steps, whatever action we need to do to make our light shine a little bit more? And God, thank you through what you've done through this church, through the years, and how it's built a reputation. And I pray that we would leverage it to invite others here, because God, others would benefit from knowing you personally. They would benefit, and their families would benefit from having a church home, from having their kids in our environment. So God, would you give us the courage to invite someone this week and to follow up with them and to bring somebody for the end of this year. We pray it all in Jesus' name. Amen.